Hello, North-South Connection podcast listeners. This is Chad Campbell with the next episode of the Fighting Spirit of 06. Today, we will be talking about the first Ring of Honor show of 2006, Hell Freezes Over, as well as the go-home show to Final Resolution and the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. But before we start that, since the last time I recorded, it's been a rough week in wrestling. And I just kind of wanted to give some stream of consciousness thoughts about the deaths that have occurred with Larry Zonka, Shad Gaspard, and Hannah Kimura. All three tragic in different ways, and all three really resonated with me in different levels and just made for kind of a crappy week, and with the real world stuff that's been going on, last weekend was probably the closest to normalcy we've gotten since the COVID-19 pandemic started. But on the wrestling front, it was just really tough. I mean, Larry Zonka and Shad Gaspard both had families. Shad valiantly saved his son before he drowned, and the issue with Hannah Kimura, or the tragic passing and suicide of her, is just, it's incredibly depressing and sad. And all I can say is my DMs are always open on Twitter. I've been through depression issues. It's a tough struggle to go through, and especially with her bullying that occurred before she decided to take her own life, and just a really tragic death. And there's not much more you can say. It was just a real crappy week overall to be a wrestling fan. In that regard. So now I will try to change gears and talk about the first Ring of Honor show of 2006. And this is a very important show in the company's history. It's entitled Hell Freezes Over. It took place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it really kickstarts the CCW versus Ring of Honor feud. There was a CCW show that took place that afternoon at the old ECW arena. But if you were watching in real time, you didn't know necessarily that the feud or kind of inter-promotional rivalry was starting, because this show was kind of presented as a one-off with Chris Hero coming in to challenge for the Ring of Honor world title against Bryan Danielson. And Chris Hero making his Ring of Honor debut. I know for somebody like myself that started following the indies in mid to late 2001, really started following Chris Hero in mid to late 2002 after I watched his 55-minute TLC match versus CM Punk. He was always somebody that I really championed for in Ring of Honor, and it felt like it was just because of his look and his body type that he was not being in Ring of Honor. He was not brought into Ring of Honor through Gabe, and it was very unfortunate. It caused a lot of angst among Chris Hero's fans. And it was something that for a while I didn't think you'd ever see, because by 2005, 2006, pretty much everybody that would be debuting in Ring of Honor besides Necro Butcher, Chris Hero, and Super Dragon, those were kind of the three big indie darling names that had never made it into Ring of Honor yet. So seeing them come in at the first part of 2006 was really refreshing. And for a lot of people, this is the best era of Ring of Honor in their entire history. So the show starts off with a Generation Next Austin Aries Roderick Strong promo. Again, Ring of Honor acoustics are terrible, so it's practically unlistenable to hear what Aries has to say. But we find out he is issuing a challenge to Ricky Reyes, At this point in time, after CM Punk left to sign with WWE, Austin Aries became the trainer of the Ring of Honor Wrestling School. And apparently Reyes has been punking out ROH students and the previous shows up to this point. So we get Austin Aries versus Ricky Reyes in our opener. And this was a good little match. It was short, but it was very intense. Ricky Reyes is somebody that I'm usually not too enthralled with, either as a singles or even in his tag team run with Rocky Romero as the Havana Pitbulls. But this was a very solid opener, 6-minute match. I thought the worst part was actually the finish, where Aries is placed in a dragon sleeper by Ricky Reyes, but he's able to roll back and get the pinfall. Felt kind of cheap, felt kind of abrupt, but besides that, no complaints. Like I said, the intensity and stiffness was there. The energy was there. And that's about all you can ask for a little tight, tidy opener. 2 3/4 stars. Then we go to the back where Colt Cabana has a promo. He's starting his feud versus Homicide. He talks about getting the Drano that was put down his throat, and this was one of the more serious Colt Cabana promos you'd probably had in Ring of Honor up to this point, and I thought he did a really good job. I think the Homicide feud is one that, if you've been following Colt's career, now his 20-plus year career, this is certainly a feud you can recall and go back to, that he displayed a more serious side of his personality with, and that they meshed well together and had good chemistry. Adam Pearce is all throughout this video, and mainly he's bitching about Cornette and his positioning with the company, and it does come into play in the Ring of Honor CCW feud, but I must say, of everything on this show, this was the most annoying. I thought we had a lot of oversaturation of Adam Pearce. He's not someone I was ever too enthralled with anyway, and so when you combine those two together, we just had way too many backstage segments involving him throughout this video. Our next match is Nigel McGuinness versus Tony Mameluke. This is Pure Title Rules, and I must say, like, I actually thought this match was refreshing. I'm a sucker for the Pure Title Rules, and I kind of, again, I think it's very easy to pigeonhole Ring of Honor as just a work rate only company, that they just had all these great work rate heavy 5-star classic, holy shit, you know, this is awesome type matches. And this was certainly not that. I mean, throughout this match, we saw that Tony Mameluke was kind of your lower level Jim Crockett Promotions worldwide challenger for the Pure title with Nigel. And Nigel played that accordingly. I thought Nigel was really great in showing his dominance. I mean, giving a few openings to Mameluke throughout the match. But overall, there was no doubt that Nigel was the superior wrestler, the superior man, and the person that had the most knowledge base for the Pure title rules and was able to use that to his advantage. Mameluke has a rope break about a minute in. Nigel continually frustrates Mameluke throughout this match. Another rope break happens right after the first. So, I mean, in the first 2 minutes, Mameluke's down 2 rope breaks as well. He's able to come back with a quick flurry. He's trying to get his arm submission. That's kind of his only hope there. Nigel has the power advantage. He's able to lift Mameluke up. They charge that a rope break to Nigel as he was in the ropes. That on commentary was seen as a judgment call. Rebound lariat from Nigel. That gets the first near fall. A key lock by Nigel, and Mameluke has to get his 3rd rope break. Nigel really toying with Mameluke, not taking him serious at all. Mameluke gets very frustrated, sends Nigel to the floor to gain a breather, but Nigel comes back with shoulder block and forearm, big charge in the corner, uppercut. Mameluke comes back with a frog splash for 2, cross arm breaker, which causes Nigel to have to get his 2nd rope break, and then he gets a nice some open fists. He gets a warning, but that gives him a flurry, and he tries to rain down more blows, but Nigel's able to grab the arm and the arm bar for the immediate submission victory. So again, this to me really showed some great tiers within the promotion. Not a great match, not one I'll probably remember maybe in a year from now, but as you're watching the video as a whole, as you're seeing the roster throughout this match, you can really tell that Nigel was definitely growing as a competitor. Mama Luke was a decent challenger in this type of role. And overall, this was very enjoyable. I went 3.25 stars. That's followed up with a tag match, which is Jimmy Rave and Alex Shelley of the Embassy versus Claudio Castagnoli and Azrael. Azrael's kind of frustrating in the first part of 06. He's up there with Adam Pearce as my two least favorite roster members around this point. He was kind of trying to give a showcase, almost like what they did with Jay Lethal about a year earlier, as somebody that broke out from Special K and showed potential, but he was just kind of in over his head, to be honest, a little bit here. Claudio's still finding his way. He'll get to a much bigger and better things in 2006, but here he's kind of in this mid-card tag. Claudio was just really good. He's able to provide a base for both Rave and Shelley. They do some great mat work throughout this match. And overall, I thought this was a very fun match besides the Azrael's portions. He ends up getting the hot tag and is pretty rough, has a lot of loose work. And as expected, the Embassy gets the win here with Jimmy Rave getting the submission victory heading into what will be his world title challenge at the 4th anniversary show. I ended up going 3 stars. The next match is interesting. This is another kind of strange thing that they would shoehorn into the Ring of Honor releases, as we basically get a Full Impact Pro showcase. For those that don't know, Full Impact Pro was a promotion in Florida that was also booked by Gabe Sapolsky, sold by ROHWrestling.com. And so you have Homicide versus Roderick Strong versus Brian Danielson, which sounds like a main event match as a triple threat. But the way it's played out is mostly a big brawl. Full Impact Pro was very southern in nature. A lot more storyline developments, a lot of character work enhancements, and a lot of kind of old school tactics. Those types of brawls, famously, I think Homicide and CM Punk in one match went into the strip club that was right next to the show where the show was running. And so that type of wrestling, certainly a contrast to Ring of Honor, and can be kind of drawing when placed into the DVD here. This was, the 4th match we'd seen. So that was a little interesting here. But overall, I thought this was a pretty strong brawl overall. Once they do come back to ringside, Colt Cabana comes in. He attacks Homicide and sends him shoulder first into the guardrail. And then back inside, we get a gutbuster by Roddy and a butterfly suplex to Danielson for 2. He attempts the stronghold, but Homicide is able to recover from Colt's damage and comes back. Homicide can't even punch with his bad arm, but he is able to get the roaring elbow to Strong from Danielson, who's also recovered. And then for the finish, Danielson's able to catch the arm from Homicide and an arm bar, and Danielson wins the FIP title. So now he's a double champion. He's the FIP champion and the Ring of Honor champion. Like I said, overall, this was mostly just an angle advancement and a showcase for FIP. The brawl was good. Match only went probably 8 minutes, and that may be including some of the brawl. I went 3 stars, but if you watch the show, don't go in with the expectations that you're going to see what could potentially been a main event match between these three. I should also mention that Roderick Strong and Brian Danielson around this time were deeply enveloped in their feud. They'd already had 2 title matches the previous fall, one at October 29th at the This Means War show, and then the following week at Vendetta in Chicago. Both haven't seen either of those matches in a while, but I remember them both being great, and that's a feud that I really enjoyed watching in the past was Roderick Strong versus Bryan Danielson. Then we get probably my most disappointing match of the night. And I've read some reviews, and reviews for old Ring of Honor shows are kind of wild. Because when they came out, I feel like a lot of the ratings were very restrained. That's something you may not be accustomed to. And I'll just mention it now, the AJ Styles versus Matt Sydal rating on this show coming up. I was shocked at how low a lot of people ranked that match, because I thought it was spectacular. I was seeing a lot of 3.75 or maybe 4 stars. And I mean, it just feels like to me, if some of these matches happen now in 2020 eyes, maybe it's just an easier echo chamber, but I feel like Twitter would be popping off, and there'd be a lot more snowflakes being shifted around. But this was the one match. It's Jay Lethal versus Christopher Daniels. And this was the match I was actually lower than the reviewers on. Whereas with the other matches we're talking about tonight, pretty much across the board, I was a little smidge higher. And I do consider myself to be probably a little stingier on my ratings than most. I kind of weigh on that side. But this match just didn't do it for me. I don't know what it was. It was a long form match, and Daniels gets the best of the opening mat work, frustrating Lethal. We learned throughout this match that Lethal's kind of going on his own away from Samoa Joe right now. Lethal tries to springboard, gets slapped in the face. But then he goes on top for a very long control segment that I didn't find interesting at all. Daniels with his comeback does hit a backdrop and a tilt-a-whirl suplex. And then Lethal's able to come back, and they start going more back and forth. And I did think the finishing run was more exciting. But I just thought the middle probably 6 to 8 minutes of this match were very dry, very boring, weren't telling a cohesive story, weren't focused on any limb work or anything else that really would emotionally connect me or engage me into the match overall. And so it just was unsuccessful as a match for me. The finish is clever, as Daniel catches Lethal's attempt off the top rope and rolls him up for 3. No surprise, Christopher Daniels is going to win. He's got a big match tomorrow night from the show on pay-per-view versus Samoa Joe. So you could say this was kind of a primer for that, as he's facing Samoa Joe's buddy and Jay Lethal. But overall, as a match, again, I was disappointed in this. Ended up going 2.75 stars. In the back, BJ Whitmer attacks Daniels after the match. He says he's never forgiven Daniels for walking out of the prophecy. And then that has Samoa Joe running in. He scurries off everyone before he attacks Daniels, because they're also in a feud at this point in time, not only in TNA, but also in Ring of Honor. Then we get an AJ Styles promo with Gary Michael Capetta. Styles says tonight's match is just a test. And also, Pierce is still looking for Cornette. And that leads us into the 6-man mayhem match that Adam Pierce was a part of. You can just blow through right this. This main notes I took from this was Trick Davis's debut. He's somebody I enjoy in the IWA Men's South stuff I've watched, but I'm unsure if he ever worked any other Ring of Honor matches. He probably came in with Hero, maybe on the recommendation of Hero. Because I know Hero was working with him at IWA. He looked okay, but not too much of an impression. I thought Pierce looked bored throughout this match overall. And the finish comes with Pierce has the jumping pile driver in the pinfall, but Jack Evans is able to hit a 630 to steal the win. 2 stars, very forgettable match. Something you can kind of just skip right over or watch mindlessly while you're making dinner or grabbing some snacks from the fridge if you're watching this DVD. Our next match is Samoa Joe versus BJ Whitmer. And Samoa Joe was coming off maybe one of the greatest wrestling years ever in 2005. He had the Necro Butcher match. He had the Kenta Kobashi match. He has the TNA 3-way. He has a ton of other great matches throughout Ring of Honor, versus Austin Aries, versus Jay Lethal. Just a ton of great matches throughout the year. Outstanding performances. And he starts off 2006 with a bang, too. The previous Thursday, So two nights before this show, he had a match versus Necro Butcher. It was their rematch. I mean, it's not as good as the Necro versus Joe 1 match from the ECW arena, that's for sure. But I still think it's a great match. I think it's a worthy, you know, 4-star follow-up to their absolute classic. And then the night after this, he, of course, is wrestling Christopher Daniels at the pay-per-view. And then he has this match, which is a nice, intense match versus BJ Whitmer. And this was just a really solid, really good, stiff brawl. I mean, Whitmer tries his best to hang with Samoa Joe. He's not as good a striker as Joe, but that actually in some ways helped the storyline of the match because it showed Joe's dominance and proficiency and just kind of his crispness of his strikes along with the visceral nature of his strikes. Joe, and God bless him too, Joe has a pay-per-view match the next night, and he takes some nasty bumps here. He goes for a running knee in the corner and ends up flipping over the top rope and taking a nasty spill to the floor. He gets a table bump out on the floor, and just overall, this was a really solid, really good brawl back and forth. Finish comes with a knockout kick and ground and pound by Joe that looked absolutely brutal, especially that knockout kick. He hit that really flush on BJ Whitmer. 3.5 stars, 7.1 out of 10 on the 10-point scale, and just a really good match. I mean, this show was kind of in need of that really good match to help kickstart it, as most of the stuff we saw up to this point was solid, if unspectacular, and this really helps jumpstart the show. And from this point on, you know, this is a great show. After this, after this segment, we get the debut of something that was probably unassuming at first, and I don't think it was that hyped until we got more of it. But this is the beginning of Jimmy Loves Lacey. So we see the whole video, Jimmy in bed pouring wine with a picture of Lacey. And this really starts the big angle between BJ Whitmer and Jimmy Jacobs and Lacey that is probably, it's either that angle or Age of the Fall that are the most defining of Jimmy Jacobs' career. This is probably the biggest feud angle of BJ Whitmer's career, and neither one of those two are bona fide Wrestling Observer Hall of Famers, but they've both been around a long time. Both are generally seen as good to very good workers, I think, historically. And this again is a very memorable angle, so it's something I'm very excited to see play out. And that flows us into our semi-main event, which is AJ Styles versus Matt Sydal. They had had three or four previous matches in IWA Mid-South the prior year. I know with three, so I'm going to guess with that without verifying with cage match, but all were very good. Really helped put Sydal, I think, on the map overall. So I was excited to see how they would react with each other in a Ring of Honor setting. A real good, energetic junior beginning period. Nothing was ridiculous and like completely preposterous where it made you have to suspend your believability, but it was all still very exciting. I thought things really started to pick up with AJ getting more vicious. He brainbusters Matt Sydal on the apron. He starts focusing on the neck with high impact moves and then near falls. Sydal hits an absolute gorgeous spinning back kick to take advantage. After that, a nasty backbreaker by Sydal. He continues to crank it out with a submission, really stretching the back of Styles. AJ's able to come back. He goes for a flying forearm, but Sydal drop kicks it. But AJ then is able to go back and hit an absolute gross kick to a sitting Sydal on the top rope, which topples Matt Sydal to the floor. On the outside, Matt is able to recover. He sends AJ in the crowd, then hits a moonsault on the top into the third row. Graceful and brutal looking at the same time. He makes great contact. He gets huge air. Matt Sydal is probably one of my favorite high flyers, maybe of all time, just because of the way he was able to combine his grace and brutality through his dives. And this was a great example of that. Back inside, we get some more reversals. AJ hits a vicious face slam for two. AJ catches Matt in midair and delivers another brutal backbreaker. And the finish is amazing as Seidel hits a top rope Rana that Styles is able to roll through for the pin. So this was definitely kind of a high impact spot fest type match, if you want to call it that. But in many ways, this felt like a fully baked, more well thought of modern day take on a spot fest that you're really starting to see in 2001, 2002, where instead of just throwing out every move they had in their arsenal, I did think there was some editing that was done here, and also thought there was some viciousness throughout the match, which helped carry it to where it just wasn't cool spots for the sake of looking cool. There was actually brutality being dished out between each of these men, with the purpose of trying to win the match overall. I thought the big spots were given an appropriate time to breathe. And overall, I mean, I thought this was a great, great, great match. I went 4.25 stars, easily the best match I've watched since I started this series, and one that I would really like everybody to seek out. I mean, I think these are two relevant names in 2020. This is a match certainly worth seeking out. Just an awesome match. Awesome match overall. Then we get an awesome angle where Chris Hero invades the arena. He has Bryce Remsenberg as his referee. He's accompanied by Necro Butcher, Nate Webb, Adam Flash. They're all in CCW yellow t-shirts. He has his CD of his entrance music that he gives to have his entrance music be played. Another note, he came from the side entrance. He didn't come out of the entrance way. So they're really trying to get across that he is this invader coming in for this match. The CCW music starts up. He comes through the crowd. Necro punches himself in the forehead, ends up busting himself open before they even get into the ring. Hero then grabs the mic, cuts an amazing promo, says the thought of Ring of Honor makes him sick to his stomach. He name drops Gabe and says that his regime reminds him of Nazi Germany and Hitler. And the crowd is just giving him great legitimate heat. I mean, this is legitimate crowd heat for Chris Hero. And like I said, it played into the online discourse so well, because there was a section of the crowd that said Hero had bad gear. Hero was too fat, too out of shape to be in Ring of Honor. And that really propelled this feud into being something more, where emotions were running high and the work rate level was raised. There's very few moments actually in wrestling history where you have a blood feud that, one, is a box office success. Two, is able to generate emotional connectivity between the fans and the performers. And then three, is actually a work rate marvel as well. And this feud and this match in particular is able to display that. Some will call this match unsuccessful, because the lights go out, the final countdown blares up, Brian gets in, him and Hero stare at each other intensely. Dragon wants to be announced as a wrestler too good to ever wrestle for CCW. And then the match starts. You kind of think they're just going to have this tear them apart, rip them up brawl, and they end up doing a more focused base technical match, with Hero trying to prove himself throughout the match as worthy of being in the Ring of Honor ring. That is off-putting to some. It's something that doesn't resonate with some people that watch the show. But it did work with me. And I think the reason it worked with me, again, was the way that this was presented as a one-off. This was presented as just going to be Chris Hero's only chance. Okay, we let you in. He ends up losing. You got beat by Bryan Danielson. Be gone with you. And even on camera commentary, we hear, oh, that's probably the last, hopefully, we'll see of Chris Hero in Ring of Honor. And Danielson ends up getting attacked by the embassy at the end of this show, kind of showing, okay, that was just a one-off nice little feud that we had. Now let's move on to what we're doing on Ring of Honor side. So this is a perplexing match to watch. I'd be interested if others watch this match and let me know what they think. These two in general have some kind of interesting chemistry together. Their first match ever singles took place in IWA Mid-South, and I really like that match as well, but that happened in the summer of 2004, so I think some people at the time thought it was going to be, you know, match of the year candidate, and that also came off the great Samoa Joe versus Chris Hero match previously in IWA Mid-South, so it was maybe slightly disappointing, but then they followed that up with another match in the fall of 2004, and then they actually have a match that I super enjoy at the TPI, Ted Petty Invitational in 2005, so they'd worked together before this match in January of 2006, and overall, this is just a different match within their feud, but one that also kind of fits nicely. I ended up going 4 stars. It's low end 4 stars, but just with the total package and the actual work that was confined within this match, it kept me engaged throughout. I thought it made Hero look credible. Danielson as a ring general, and overall, I was not disappointed in the slightest in the match we actually got here, especially in retrospect, knowing that greater things are to come with the feud overall. So that ends the show, like I said, on a strong note. 2 4-star matches plus at the end, and a very good Samoa Joe versus BJ Whitmer match. So, I mean, overall, this is a DVD, an easy watch. Not much that I would consider bad. Ring of Honor was on a roll. Now let's switch gears and talk about the Impact that aired on January 14, 2006, same night as the Hell Freezes Over show. It starts off with, this was the go-home show to Final Resolution, and we start off with Abyss versus Jay Lethal. Abyss just kills Lethal. I thought he looked good doing so. Black Hole Slam, other power moves, and I thought this was very effective in showing the powers of Abyss as he's facing Rhino at Final Resolution. 0.5 star for the squad, but very enjoyable squash overall from Abyss. Then we get the TNA 2005 awards, the KO Knockout of the Year, Jackie Gata, the Move of the Year, Canadian Destroyer. Who to watch for in 2006 is Christian Cage. Tag Team of the Year is 3D. Moment of the Year was when Christian Cage debuts. X Division Performer of the Year, AJ Styles. Feud of the Year is Christopher Daniels versus AJ Styles. Match of the Year is the Barbed Wire Massacre, which I was shocked, by the way, that beat the three-way from Unbreakable. I mean, come on, it's like, know your audience. I mean, by that point, just seemed stupid. And then we get the big announcement for who is Mr. TNA 2005. Turns out it is AJ Styles. Mike Tenay brings him out. AJ thanks the fans and hands him an award. But Shannon Moore comes out. He throws powder in AJ's eyes and ends up stealing the award. So it looks like we're headed towards a feud with Shannon Moore versus AJ Styles. I'll reserve my judgment. Shannon Moore is not someone I'm too fond of, but I guess we'll see how it plays out. Then we get another video package of what's been going on between Conan and Bob Armstrong. Interview in the back with Kip James and BG James. BG says, where did all this come from with Conan? He thought they were buddies, and he doesn't know what pit of hell his heart is at the moment. And this actually, I thought, was a very good, convicted promo from BG. He says they're going to seek out revenge against his dad from Conan. They're going to kick his ass, and he's got his backup with him in Kip James. So a solid promo. Really enjoyed it, actually. Then we get another squash match, which is Samoa Joe versus Cassidy Riley. Tune up for Joe heading into the pay-per-view. Christopher Daniels is on commentary. During the match, Shannon Moore and AJ actually roll in because AJ was still chasing Shannon Moore around the impact zone, and Joe punches AJ, who then hits him with a Pele kick, and Riley's able to actually get a near fall off of that. So I don't know. It's maybe a little convoluted because AJ is now in this feud with Shannon Moore. He still has lingering issues with Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe, and at the pay-per-view, he's facing Hiroshi Tanahashi in kind of a special feature type match. So there's a little bit of uncertainty in where exactly AJ's focus is right now. Joe is able to get recover. He kicks the crap out of Riley, hits a big knee, muscle buster, and a choke to grab the victory, half a star for the squash. Joe then grabs a chair, and Daniels steps in to stop that. Insecurity by Daniels, and he hits Samoa Joe with the chair. Don West was loving this, absolutely losing his mind throughout that segment, and he's fired up and pumped for the pay-per-view match coming up tomorrow night. We get clips of fans talking about Sting coming in. Then we get an awful interview with Shane Douglas and Jackie Gayda. Jackie calls him Dr. Phil. Jackie says this isn't anyone's business, the letter she's holding. It's just between her and Jeff Jarrett. And then Scott D'Amore comes in and says this is being blown way out of proportion. Overall, this is bad. Probably not going to lead anywhere. Convincing and just bad. When you think of bad TNA, this is this angle. Jackie Gayda, no natural charisma at all. Shannon Moore and AJ, they're still fighting, so we'll see. Kind of our feature match, I guess you can call it, of the night is Petey Williams, Eric Young, and A1 of Team Canada versus Matt Bentley, Chris Sabin, Sanjay Dutt. Basic action here. Shelly is out at ringside with the Shelly Cam, and he ends up causing the finish. He trips up Sabin, and then Petey's able to hit the Canadian Destroyer for the win. Good basic action, about 5 minutes, nothing extraordinary here, but 2 stars, not bad. Raven promo talking about his perils throughout his life. He talks about getting his head shaved, not knowing his opponents, and he could lose his career again at the pay-per-view. And he does hope it's someone from his past, because that's somebody he can prepare for. Now we get a Monty Brown and Jeff Jarrett promo package. They're kind of sitting at ringside with no fans around. They say that 3D, Christian, and Sting are all flavors of the month. Monty talks about being on the field with some of the greatest football players of all time, and that makes this a piece of cake. Jarrett says they are the cornerstones of the promotion, and they built it from the ground up. I mean, overall, good go-home promo for the heels. I had no problems with this either. Was a lot better than This Is Your Life, Sting, let me tell you that. Then it's our main event, which is America's Most Wanted versus Christian Cage and Rhino. Cage is beat up for a bit. He then gets Rana and takes over on Harris. Rhino gets tagged in. They do a running charge in the corner. Wes gets very pumped at the tag team pairing of Christian Cage and Rhino. Rhino misses another corner charge. AMW takes over on him. They work him over, but then it continues on where they end up working over Cage. Cage does good with his hope spots, reaching out to the wrong corner and whatnot to really sell the damage. He does also have a little trickle of blood rolling down as he gets the hot tag to Rhino. Rhino's hot tag I thought was really well done. All hell ends up breaking loose with all four in. Cage comes back in with a cross body, goes for the prettier, but Gail Kill comes in, hits a low blow. She goes to the top, but 3D stops her from doing that. They run to ringside. 3D then hits the reverse 3D, and Cage gets the frog splash to pick up the win. Rhino got a goring too in that finishing segment. And then we get our ending schmoz with Monty Brown, Abyss, Jared all come out. We get the big finish, putting over the big matches. The crowd's chanting, "We want Sting." Jared slams the guitar on Christian, and the heels are standing tall leading into the pay-per-view. Lights go out. Sting yells. Sting calls them the Queen of the Hill and the Apple Female, which was probably the worst part of all this. I think we could have just ended the show with the lights going out to set the stage for the pay-per-view. I don't think we needed Sting's cringe-worthy commentary. But as a tag match, I thought this was a fun match. And I got to say, last week's Impact was hit or miss. The The Generation Next tag was really good, but the This Is Your Life stuff with Sting was really bad, and a couple of the other segments were bad, including the Ron Killing stuff. So I thought this was a good improvement and a solid Impact to watch. It blew by, you know, nothing amazing, but nothing I would have a problem giving like a 5.5, 6 out of 10. And I did think it did a good job of hyping up the pay-per-view, as you saw most of the big matches at least have a segment and have some sort of juice heading into the pay-per-view the next night. So finally, to finish our show today, let's start by discussing Final Resolution 2006. Always kind of weird to me that it's the first pay-per-view of the year and they called it Final, but I mean, it's TNA. Well, we start out with a 6-man tag. Alex Shelley, Austin Aries, Roderick Strong. So, again, people you saw the night before in Ring of Honor. They are facing off against Chris Sabin, Matt Bentley, and Sanjay Dutt. Tracy's in the schoolgirl outfit. Tanae purrs on that. Sabin has cut his hair and has blonde highlights from the Impact that we saw the night before. So that kind of is the thing with the taping schedule. I mean, I guess he could have got on in that Sunday afternoon, but not a lot of turnaround time from what we saw the night before, where he had long, got darker hair, now has blonde highlights and is cut short. Good beginning work from all. Generation Next trio gets triple team, takes over. Dave Hebner is looking around like a doofus on that. Sanjay Dutt is the face in peril. They work over his back. Jerry Lynn is also out at ringside looking on. Great double team of diving headbutt by Aries turned into the SDF, and then the Rings of Saturn by Shelley to finish that up. Hot tag is made, and then we get all six going after each other. Dutt comes back. He hits an unassisted slice bread number two. Sabin's able to hit a tope through the ropes. Bentley goes for the super kick, but Strong is able to hit the sick kick to stop that. Tracy is up on the apron arguing with Roderick Strong, and Bentley is able to hit the super kick on him, but Shelley is in the right position to roll Bentley up immediately for the pin. Fun opener all around. Was given more time than the Impact match with Team Canada and the Sabin trio the night before. So, you know, just a fun match, a good popcorn type match to get you settled in for the pay-per-view. 3 stars. Next is the worst match of the night, which is the James Crew, Kip James, BG James versus Diamonds in the Rough. Very generic tag. I thought the James Crew looked old. BG does his opening spiel, and I mean, Kip ends up getting the win. I win a star in 3/4, which actually reading it now may be generous when I think about the match. And this just seemed like a step down. I mean, we had a very spirited, inspired promo from BJ the night before talking about the feud with Conan. And I don't know what the deal was with LAX and Conan involvement and why we didn't get something with them at the pay-per-view, but this felt like a step back, and this honestly felt like an Impact match that we had the honor of paying $29.99 for here on pay-per-view. Christopher Daniels backstage does a good enough promo saying that Joe will be defeated tonight. Samoa Joe is still undefeated in TNA. Christopher Daniels is hoping to break that streak with their match. Now we get a very interesting match in 2020. In 2006, this was a first-time match, and it's AJ Styles versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Hiroshi Tanahashi in 2006 was an interesting case in that he was becoming a big name in New Japan, but this is kind of right smack dab in the middle of the Inokiism, and the political landscape in New Japan was pretty much a mess at this point, with Brock Lesnar was in power at this point, and there was still a lot of kind of animosity between the Shooters, MMA stars that were getting pushed pretty heavily, and then what is usually called as like the true-born New Japan Dojo trainees, of which Hiroshi Tanahashi would be a part of. So he's kind of displayed here as a high flyer. it doesn't quite fit his gimmick overall, even at this point in time, but we'll see how it works. I did listen to some Brian Alvarez Figure Four dailies heading into this show, and there was a lot of talk that they thought this match could be a Styles clash between the two. But we get some chain wrestling to start. Today gives some parallels for Tanahashi to Great Muta. Tanahashi gives a quick quarter drop kick that starts working over AJ's arm. AJ stops the progress with a drop kick, and Tanahashi bells to the floor. Back inside, we get a strike exchange. AJ gets the advantage. He drops a knee. Tana is able to come back with a German suplex, and then he slows the match down. But I thought he did a good job not staying in any one move for too long. Dragon Sleeper is turned into a giant swing from the Dragon Sleeper position. I thought that looked good from Tanahashi. The count is stopped because Tana had his knee cutting off the wind of AJ's throat, so the hold had to be broke. And then they start going into the finishing stretch run. Good struggle back and forth between the two. But the feud continues from the night before with Shannon Moore running in. AJ's able to knock him out with a Pele kick. And then he's able to hit the Styles Clash, which you can tell Tanahashi didn't quite know how to take. He took it pretty awkwardly. So AJ wins this match. It was kind of a showcase match for him. Fun match overall. They, of course, had much better matches in New Japan about a decade later. But for this one, I went 6.4, 3.25 stars. And, enjoyed it. It was good enough as the third match on a pay-per-view. But again, as you can see, we had a run-in here or some sort of interference. So first match, Tracy interfered. Second match, we had Kona involvement. This match, we had Shannon Moore running in. Keep that in mind throughout the night. Then we get just a wild Raven promo calling Larry Zbyszko a fascist, among other things. Just a really weird promo. And that sets up Raven versus his mystery opponent. Sean Waltman ends up being the mystery opponent, so I wasn't too annoyed by that. I enjoyed that. Good enough surprise, I think, for the crowd. Raven brings out his grocery cart of goodies. And I actually saw that they had a pay-per-view match the prior year. But this ends up becoming kind of a one-off for Waltman. I have no memories of their 2005 pay-per-view match. Probably never seen it. So they were familiar with each other, because I actually figured this was a first-time singles match between the two. I did not recall they had past history. Raven is bleeding 2 minutes in off a kendo stick shot. Waltman dives to the outside on top of him. He keeps using the shopping cart to ram into Raven. Raven puts Waltman in the car. He takes an ugly bump from the stage, falling off of it. Ref bump is done. Dave Hamner looks on ominously. The ladder is introduced. They take some bumps off that. X-Factor from the ladder through a table. That looked really cool. And then Larry Zbyszko ends up counting the pin when Raven's foot was on the rope. So a real shoddy finish here, with the ref being bumped, Larry Zbyszko coming in, asserting his authority, counting out Raven, quote-unquote ending his career in TNA. Of course, the announcers called it a miscarriage of justice. But my whole thing with this was, would the rope break actually count in a hardcore match to begin with? That's another one of those things where the rules aren't very hard and fast, because, I mean, 2 minutes before, you just saw somebody get thrown off the stage in a grocery cart. So now all of a sudden rope breaks are a big feature of the match. And the finish certainly didn't work here. Larry wants to escort Raven out of the arena. The plunder brawl was fine, but the angle I think is very dumb. I'm not interested in seeing Larry Zbyszko and Raven have a long-form feud with each other. And so this was a miss for me, 2.25 stars. Raven walks out yelling, having a yelling Don West, basically being his hype man, saying that he got robbed. Then Shane Douglas interviews Ron the True Killings. Ron says he made history since he's been in TNA, and he's given a warning shot for everyone. Conan interrupts that. He offers him a spot with his crew, but Killing says he has to contemplate that. Tanay then says that TNA and wrestling is the only thing that keeps Raven from blowing his brains out, and we get a post-mortem of Raven's time in TNA. So just a wild characterization of Raven that seemed a little severe here. We see Raven actually leaving the building. Larry's yelling at him to get the hell out of here. And then who should interrupt Jackie Gata? She says that her and Raven have some things in common. She calls Larry Grandpa. And overall, that made just a bad angle worse. I don't know where that is leading, but it just can't be good, because anything involving Jackie Gata has not been good at all. And the angle with Larry and Raven has been bad as well. So two wrongs do not make a right in this situation. Our next match is Bobby Roode versus Ron the Truth Killing. So I was dreading this because of their Impact start-stop match they had 2 weeks before. But this was actually pretty good. We get some decent action. Troop does a nutty dive to the outside. Roode's on the attack. It slows down, but thought Truth had some good energy in his comeback. He hits a flying forearm that gets a near fall. Good back kick, and then Conan runs down to ruin my good mood for the match. Him and Truth argue. Roode's able to hit the clothesline to the back of the head and get the pin. So again, another run-in. I mean, this is our fifth match, and we've had crap happen in all the matches so far. It's a reoccurring and very frustrating thing, because, I mean, this show overall, like when we get to my concluding thoughts for this show, it had potential to be a very good show. The actual in-ring action for this show was very good, but you're paying for a pay-per-view. You're paying to see. I mean, the show is called fucking Final Resolution. This is not Final Resolution when you have run-ins and angles that are developing in every single match. So you had that here. Again, a very shockingly solid match, 2 3/4 stars, which feels like a miracle match compared to what we saw from Impact 2 weeks before. But just frustrating. After the match, Conan and Truth, he wants to hug it out. Truth is unsure about that. BG comes out, says he's going to kick Conan's ass, but then Homicide attacks, and R-Truth, instead of helping, he just kind of bails out. Kip James comes in, hits a chair on Homicide, and so that feud is definitely continuing. Sinister Minister promo. Sinister Minister is an interesting person overall, and I was listening to the Extreme Three-Way Dance that Justin, Genie, and D'Amato did, and Justin talked about, actually, I'm sorry, it was in the TNA Impact Never Dies review they did of the 2002 show with Aaron and Genie and Justin. And Justin was talking about how he's a fan of Sinister Minister and kind of his whacked out promos. And I do like that style to a degree, and thought it really worked in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I'm less sure of it now, because by this point in time, we just had so much Sinister Minister on our screen, and there was just a lot of kind of revelations and generosities and stuff that Sinister Minister would talk about and never really deliver on. And that's kind of what we had in this promo as well. We learned that Rhino's lost his way. They're going to correct that. Just a lot of platitudes. Some stuff landed, some stuff did not. And that leads us into our Big Hoss match, which was Abyss versus Rhino. I never would have thought that I'd been excited for this match, but the way it'd been built on TV, I actually thought this was the second best built match on the pay-per-view behind Christopher Daniels versus Samoa Joe. So I was looking forward to this. Rhino starts out running down the ring, House of Fire. He does a plancha to the outside. Abyss is able to take over, and that's more of a chore with him on top. Abyss is an interesting wrestler in that he has very good power impact moves and spurts of energy. We saw that in the squash match he had on Impact, where that was a great squash. He looked brutal. and was able to hit his big high impact moves, get in, get out. When he's asked to control on top, it becomes more of a chore. It's almost like a Kane complex to a degree. Abyss really goes for the kind of horror villain stalking vibe. But in a fight confined to a wrestling ring in that small of a surface area, it does make him just seem kind of slow, plodding, actually a little bit aloof, which is not really what you're wanting to go for. Rhino's bumping well off of his offense. He does go headfirst into a chair that was set up in the turnbuckle. Rhino uses the chair in plain view of the referee. And then that doesn't generate a DQ in his comeback. So, this is where you get a loss of logic. This drove me nuts in this match. So they're using a chair in plain view. And then Sinister Minister gets up on the apron to distract the ref so Abyss could use the chain. Now, why would one weapon matter in plain view of the referee, but the other weapon, you have to block it with the manager distracting the referee? Just inconsistency across the board. Somebody not really giving oversight and thought into these matches, and just makes it look kind of stupid. Rhino kicks out of the chain shot. Minister then gives the doomsday signal. Rhino's able to stop that with a spinebuster for a two count. Rhino goes for a pod driver at the top, but that is blocked. Abyss then hits the black hole slam onto the chairs and gets the pin. Abyss motions that he wants the belt. I mean, this had its moments. 2.5 stars. Probably, sadly, a little bit of a letdown given I was hyped going in. And just again, that chain and chair and all that nonsense really drove me nuts, because I just don't understand why one would matter but one wouldn't. I mean, they're both illegal weapons being interjected into the match. So either just say, you know, the referee wants to see these two monsters go at it and is giving them appropriate discretion, or, you know, be done with it, DQ him. Just bad. But as frustrated as that made me, nothing compared to the finish of our next match, which is America's Most Wanted versus 3D. And holy shit, did this drive me nuts, this finish. Oh, this was crazy. We see Dory Funk is in attendance. He looked comatose watching this match, and he probably rolled over in his non-existent grave when he saw the finish. Devon and Storm, they try to do a Malenko versus Guerrero as standoff to start. That doesn't really work out. I mean, they try, but it looks slow. Wes keeps talking about the crowd really coming alive when they're kind of mildly clapping in a pretty funny moment. Ray comes, Bubba Ray, Bully Ray, whatever, he comes in. He has more shine and energy versus Harris, and then the match resets again. 3D gets taken over. And I thought AMW has a good arsenal of double team moves. I've been enjoying them as a team on top. A lot of back and forth. 3D hits a doomsday. The crowd is hot and ready for it. I mean, I will say this. I thought this match was good. Abyss versus Rhino disappointed me, but as far as four big guys going at it, I thought this match actually delivered once Devon and Storm decided they weren't cruiserweights. It really beefed up, and the crowd, say what you will about this Impact crowd, but they were ready for 3D to win these freaking tag titles. And then we get to this finish. So the finish is Gail Kim has powder. It gets kicked up in the air. Ends up getting kicked in her face, the referee's face, Wildcat's face, all in their eyes. Bubba does a roll-up. The referee has powder in his eyes, but I guess knew that a roll-up was occurring. He makes the count. The crowd goes nuts. You know, there's 3D celebrating. Team Canada ends up running down. They attack 3D with hockey sticks. Then they drag Wildcat on top of the 3D in the pinning position. They revive the referee, who's rubbing his eyes, and he doesn't make a new count. He just assumes the first count he made was for AMW on top, because that's what he sees now, you know, after he's been down and out for 2 fucking minutes and hearing all this commotion in the ring. And so he awards the match to AMW, and they end up winning. I mean, this was just bad. Dumb, bad, no sense. It's too much of a logic gap to say if the referee can't see what he's doing, how'd he know the shoulders were down when he made the pinfall? Why'd he make the pinfall in the first place? Just tons of logic gaps here. Awful. Just awful. Awful, awful. I hated this finish. You know, I equated it in my notes to Starrcade 87 with the Road Warriors. I mean, this is obviously a lower level of that. But, I mean, this crowd was really ready for 3D to win these tag belts. They went nuts when they thought 3D won the tag belts. And I'm not certainly not a huge Dudley Boys fan in 2006. But for what this crowd wanted, they should have delivered that. And we'll see if they can ever get it back. But I thought this was a terrible finish and really put a damper on a match that I thought was, again, shockingly good. I went 3 stars on the match, but all-time bad finish. Just an all-time bad finish. Final go-home promo for Monty Brown, Jeff Jarrett. Nothing groundbreaking here, but they're serious. They got rid of the comedy stuff, which is refreshing. And so I was looking forward to the tag match. Now we get our semi-main event, Christopher Daniels versus Samoa Joe. A very simmering type match that was very good for most of it and then starts becoming great once the storyline gets mixed in. So progressively over the match, Samoa Joe gets more and more vicious. Ends up knocking out Christopher Daniels through a series of kicks, but Daniels will not give up. They won't throw in the towel. AJ is down at ringside, kind of helping corner for Christopher Daniels. He's the one that ends up throwing in the towel for the match overall. Just a brutal match. This is kind of the shoddy finish that works. I mean, this is not a clean finish, of course, because somebody threw in the towel for Christopher Daniels. But of all the crap finishes we got, and this one was the most clever, I thought. And maybe that's just the performers rising to the occasion. But this was a great match. I went 4 stars, very solid 4 stars on it. A worthy addition to their feud, to the TNA X Division feud overall. Samoa Joe looks like a beast in TNA right now. He clearly should have been their biggest star, should have been prepped to be the world champion and lead the promotion throughout the end of 2006, 2007, 2008. You can keep on rolling. They're booking him perfectly right now. That'll be changing, I know, coming up. But he's a monster. His kicks to Daniels were sick. It just got more and more brutal, and Daniels kept showing more and more resiliency, not giving up, and not being completely knocked out from the brutality that Joe was dishing out. So if you watch one thing from this show, I would obviously recommend this. And probably the main event would actually be the second thing I'd recommend, as it's Sting and Christian Cage versus Monty Brown, Jeff Jarrett. Christian promo to start. Sting gets a really nice reaction from the fans. I don't want to underplay it. It was a good reaction. The fans seemed happy to see him. But recently TNA did like their top 25 moments of all time, and this was at number 2. I didn't think it was that good. I didn't think it was that wild. I actually think the decimal level may have been higher on 3D when in the tag belts and that false finish than when Sting showed up. Christian and Monty Brown start. Christian has a nice series of Chance, and then Jared and Sting are in. Hip toss and drop kick. Don West absolutely loses his mind, saying Sting still got it. We got you still got it, Chance, from the crowd. Christian does two Stinger splashes to mimic Sting, but Gail Kim's able to distract the ref. That gives Jared a low blow. He sends Christian to the floor. Kim adds a Rana from the apron. They start working over Christian in the ring. Monty does a great combo of a backbreaker and a T-bone, and he's screaming at Sting, wanting a piece of him. Christian is able to recover, hits a frog splash, goes for the pin, but they're able to cut him off. Some good teases towards the hot tag here. Jarrett and Monty go for the concerto. They miss that. Sting is able to get the hot tag, but Monty clotheslines the referee. Another ref bump, another non-clean shoddy finish, and that's a clean sweep for the whole pay-per-view overall. Inverted atomic drop by Sting. He gets a scorpion deathlock. Monty suplexes Cage into Sting to break that up. Sting jumps right to conclusions, thinking Christian did it on purpose. They kind of have a little bit of a back and forth, not trusting each other, which seemed like a very, like, 0-60 moment for Sting, you know, all of a sudden questioning that that Cage would turn on him. I don't know. It just didn't come off well. Monty then brings in the belt. Christian ducks. Sting and Christian face off. Sting contemplates slamming Christian with the belt, but Team Canada runs in and they put their differences aside. Dual scorpion death drops for them. Christian does a big dive to Monty Brown on the outside. Gail is on the top rope. Sting scares her down from the top rope. But meanwhile, Jeff Jarrett's recovered. He slams Sting with the belt. Sting barely kicks out of that. That was a good false finish. West, I should mention, is losing his ever-loving mind again. I know I said that, but this was he was up to 100 on that kick out by Sting. And then Sting and Christian Cage fight together, and then high five, guitar shot attempt, but Sting grabs the bat. He smashes the guitar with the bat. That was a cool-looking visual. And then Jared is hit with the bat, scorpion death drop for the pinfall. So, you know, overall, very schmozzy, you know, everything but the kitchen sink type tag match, but was effective. I had a lot of fun with it, and ended up going 3.25 stars on the match overall to end the pay-per-view. So again, if you look at this pay-per-view, if I run down my thoughts, a lot of matches at 3 stars are better and one great match, but the problem was we just had too many run-in finishes, and overall, this was a decent to good show. Again, probably in the 5.5, maybe 6 range, if I'm generous, because of the Daniels versus Joe match. So a thumbs in the middle, I would say, pay-per-view overall. That could have been a thumbs up, I think, with some easy tweaks. And that's kind of unfortunate with where TNA is right now. Like, through three shows that I've watched of them so far, it's kind of like they're almost there. They're almost there. They have the talent. It's just they don't have the booking cohesiveness to kind of bring it all together. So hopefully one of these days, and I'm still enjoy watching their plight throughout all this stuff. So that'll wrap up this edition of the Fighting Spirit of 06. Next week, we actually get an easy week. Thank God, only a SmackDown, Raw, and Impact. So no super shows, and that's good. We'll need that, because the following week, the last week in January, is huge, where we get Raw, SmackDown, Impact, 2 Ring of Honor shows, and the Royal Rumble. So a lot of going on that week. But thank you once again for listening. Please check out all the other shows at the North-South Connection Podcast Network. We're trying to pump out content 5 days a week for you guys. If you'd be so kind, please leave us a review, as that helps us get more ears and eyes on the product. And this is Chad Campbell signing off.